Chapter 26. I observed the older sister put her hand into her pocket. I will see, said she, if I have a souse. A souse? Give 12, said the suppliant. Nature has been bountiful to you. Be bountiful to a poor man. I would, friend, with all my heart, said the younger, if I had it. My fair charitable, said he, addressing himself to the elder, what is it, but your goodness and humanity which make your bright eyes so sweet, that they outshine the morning even in this dark passage? And what was it which made the Marquis de Santer and his brother say, so much of you both, as they just passed by? The two ladies seemed much affected, and impulsively at the same time they put their hands into their pockets, and each took out a 12-sous piece. The contest between them and the poor suppliant was no more. It was continued between themselves which of the two should give the 12-sous piece in charity, and, to end the dispute, they both gave it together, and the man went away. Solution, I stepped hastily after him. It was the very man whose success in asking charity of the woman before the door of the hotel had so puzzled me, and I found at once his secret, or at least the basis of it. It was flattery. Delicious essence, how refreshing art thou to nature! How strongly are all its powers, and all its weaknesses on thy side! How sweetly dost thou mix with the blood, and help it through the most difficult and tortuous passages to the heart! The poor man, as he was not straitened for time, had given it here in a larger dose. It is certain he had a way of bringing it into less form for the many sudden causes he had to do with in the streets, but how he contrived to correct, sweeten, concenter, and qualify it, I vex not my spirit with the inquiry. It is enough, the beggar gained 2 12-sous pieces, and they can best tell the rest who have gained much greater matters by it. Application, we get forward in the world, not so much by doing services as receiving them. You take a withering twig, and put it in the ground, and then you water it, because you have planted it. Monsieur le Comte de B, merely because he had done me one kindness in the affair of my passport, would go on, and do me another the few days he was at Paris, in making me known to a few people of rank, and they were to present me to others, and so on. I had got master of my secret just in time to turn these honors to some little account, otherwise, as is commonly the case, I should have dined, or supped a single time or two round, and then by translating French looks and attitudes into plain English, I should presently have seen that I had got hold of the couvert asterisk of some more entertaining guest, and in course of time should have resigned all my places one after another, merely upon the principle that I could not keep them. As it was, things did not go much amiss. Asterisk plate, napkin, knife, fork, and spoon. I had the honor of being introduced to the old Marquis de B. In days of yore he had signalized himself by some small feats of chivalry in the Cowardammer, and had dressed himself out to the idea of tilts and tournaments ever since. The Marquis de B wished to have it thought the affair was somewhere else than in his brain. He could like to take a trip to England, and ask much of the English ladies. Stay where you are, I beseech you, Monsieur le Marquis, said one. Les messieurs Anglais can scarce get a kind look from them as it is. The Marquis invited me to supper. M.P., the farmer general, was just as inquisitive about our taxes. They were very considerable, he heard. If we knew but how to collect them, said I, making him a low bow. I could never have been invited to M.P.'s concerts upon any other terms. I had been misrepresented to me. The queue as an esprit me. The Q was an esprit herself. She burned with impatience to see me, and hear me talk. I had not taken my seat, before I saw she did not care a sou, whether I had any wit or no. I was let in, to be convinced she had. I call heaven to witness I never once opened the door of my lips. Me. The five. Vowed to every creature she met, she had never had a more improving conversation with a man in her life. There are three epochs in the empire of a French woman. She is coquette, then deist, then devout. The empire during these is never lost, she only changes her subjects. When 35 years and more have unpeopled her dominion of the slaves of love, she repeoples it with slaves of infidelity, and then with the slaves of the church. Me, the five, was vibrating between the first of these epochs. The color of the rose was fading fast away. She ought to have been a deist 5 years before the time I had the honor to pay my first visit. She placed me upon the same sofa with her for the sake of disputing the point of religion more closely. In short, me, the five, told me she believed nothing. I told me, the five, it might be her principle, but I was sure it could not be her interest to level the outworks, without which I could not conceive how such a citadel as hers could be defended, that there was not a more dangerous thing in the world than for a beauty to be a deist, that it was a debt I owed my creed, not to conceal it from her, that I had not been 5 minutes upon the sofa beside her, before I had begun to form designs, and what is it, but the sentiments of religion, and the persuasion they had existed in her breast, which could have checked them as they rose up. We are not adamant, said I, taking hold of her hand, and there is need of all restraints till age in her own time steals in, and lays them on us. But, my dear lady, said I, kissing her hand, it is too soon. I declare I had the credit all over Paris of unperverting me. De V. She affirmed to M. D. and the Abbem that in 1/2 hour I had said more for revealed religion than all their encyclopedia had said against it. I was listed directly into me, the five, O's coterie, and she put off the epoch of deism for 2 years. I remember it was in this coterie, in the middle of a discourse, in which I was showing the necessity of a first cause, that the young Count de Fainant took me by the hand to the farthest corner of the room, to tell me that my solider was pinned too straight about my neck. It should be plus badinant, said the Count, looking down upon his own. But a word, M. Yorick, to the wise, and from the wise, M. le Comte, replied I, making him a bow, is enough. The Count de Fainant embraced me with more ardor than ever I was embraced by mortal man. For 3 weeks together I was of every man's opinion I met. Party, C. M. Yorick a oughtn't desperate cane now sauders. Ill race and mean, said another. Kest un bon enfant, said a third. And at this price I could have eaten and drunk, and been merry all the days of my life at Paris, but it was a dishonest reckoning. I grew ashamed of it. It was the gain of a slave. Every sentiment of honor revolted against it. The higher I got, the more was I forced upon my beggarly system. The better the coterie, the more children of art, I languished for those of nature. And one night, after a most vile prostitution of myself to 6 different people, I grew sick, went to bed, and ordered horses in the morning to set out for Italy. Contrast, a shoe coming loose from the forefoot of the thill horse at the beginning of the ascent of Mount Torira, the postillion dismounted, twisted the shoe off, and put it in his pocket. As the ascent was of 5 or 6 miles, and that horse our main dependence, I made a point of having the shoe fastened on again as well as we could, but the postillion had thrown away the nails, and the hammer in the chaise box being of no great use without them, I submitted to go on. He had not mounted 6 miles higher when, coming to a flinty piece of road, the poor devil lost a second shoe, and from off his other forefoot. I then got out of the chaise in good earnest, and seeing a house about 1/4 mile to the left hand, with a great deal to do, I prevailed upon the postillion to turn up to it. The look of the house, and of everything about it, as we drew near, soon reconciled me to the disaster. It was a little farmhouse surrounded with about 20 acres of vineyard, about as much corn, and close to the house on one side was a potagerie of 1.5 acres, full of everything which could make plenty in a French peasant's house, and on the other side was a little wood which furnished wherewithal to dress it. It was about 8 in the evening when I got to the house, so I left the postillion to manage his point as he could, and for mine I walked directly into the house. The family consisted of an old gray-headed man and his wife, with five or six sons and sons-in-laws, and their several wives, and a joyous genealogy out of them. They were all sitting down together to their lentil soup. A large wheaten loaf was in the middle of the table, and a flagon of wine at each end of it promised joy through the stages of the repast was a feast of love. The old man rose up to meet me, and with a respectful cordiality would have me sit down at the table. My heart was sat down the moment I entered the room, so I sat down at once like a son of the family, and to invest myself in the character as speedily as I could, I instantly borrowed the old man's knife, and taking up the loaf, cut myself a hearty luncheon. And, as I did it, I saw a testimony in every eye, not only of an honest welcome, but of a welcome mixed with thanks, that I had not seemed to doubt it. Was it this, or tell me, nature, what else it was that made this morsel so sweet, and to what magic I owe it, that the draught I took of their flagon was so delicious with it, that they remain upon my palate to this hour? If the supper was to my taste, the grace which followed it was much more so. When supper was over, the old man gave a knock upon the table with the haft of his knife, to bid them prepare for the dance. The moment the signal was given, the women and girls ran all together into a back apartment, to tie up their hair, and the young men to the door, to wash their faces and change their sabots, and in 3 minutes every soul was ready upon a little esplanade before the house to begin. The old man and his wife came out last, and, placing me betwixt them, sat down upon a sofa of turf by the door. The old man had some 50 years ago been no mean performer upon the veal, asterisk and at the age he was then of, touched well enough for the purpose. His wife sung now, and then a little to the tune, then intermitted, and joined her old man again, as their children and grandchildren danced before them. Asterisk a small violin, such as was used by the wandering jonglers of the Middle Ages. Editor. It was not till the middle of the second dance when, from some pauses, in the movement wherein they all seemed to look up, I fancied I could distinguish an elevation of spirit different from that which is the cause, or the effect of simple jollity. In a word, I thought I beheld religion mixing in the dance. But, as I had never seen her so engaged, I should have looked upon it now as one of the illusions of an imagination, which is eternally misleading me, had not the old man, as soon as the dance ended, said that this was their constant way, and that all his life long he had made it a rule, after supper was over, to call out his family to dance and rejoice, believing, he said, that a cheerful and contented mind was the best sort of thanks to heaven that an illiterate peasant could pay, or a learned prelate either, said one. When you have gained the top of Mount Torira, you run presently down to Lyons. Adieu then to all rapid movements. It is a journey of caution, and it fares better with sentiments, not to be in a hurry with them, so I contracted with a vulturin, to take his time with a couple of mules, and convey me in my own chaise safe to Turin through Savoy. Poor, patient, quiet, honest people, fear not. Your poverty, the treasury of your simple virtues, will not be envied you by the world, nor will your values be invaded by it. Nature, in the midst of thy disorders, thou art still friendly to the scantiness thou hast created. With all thy great works about thee little hast thou left to give, either to the scythe, or to the sickle, but to that little thou grantest safety and protection, and sweet are the dwellings which stand so sheltered. William Macapus Thackeray, on being found out, at the close, let us say, of Queen Anne's reign, when I was a boy at a private and preparatory school for young gentlemen, I remember the wiseacre of a master ordering us all, one night, to march into a little garden at the back of the house, and thence to proceed one by one into a tool, or hen house. I was but a tender little thing just put into short clothes, and can't exactly say whether the house was for tools or hens, and in that house to put our hands into a sack which stood on a bench, a candle burning beside it. I put my hand into the sack. My hand came out quite black. I went and joined the other boys in the schoolroom, and all their hands were black too. By reason of my tender age, and there are some critics who, I hope, will be satisfied by my acknowledging that I am 156 next birthday, I could not understand what was the meaning of this night excursion, this candle, this tool house, this bag of soot. I think we little boys were taken out of our sleep too. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.